Good afternoon. My name is Therese, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the AUCD Roy Twite webinar. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Ms. Carla Kmitz. You may begin, Carla.
Thank you, Therese. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's webinar on maternal and child characteristics during mother-child play sessions, associations with child language outcomes at 18 and 24 months for children with congenital hearing loss. This webinar is supported by the AUCD cooperative agreement with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities, which I'll describe in a little more detail later. Just wanted to give you all an overview of today's call. My name is Carla Kmitz, and I'm the project specialist on the cooperative agreement with the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities here at AUCD, and I'm joined by my colleague Sue Lin, who is the project director on that agreement as well. Today's presentation, as I said, will be on child language outcomes at 18 to 24 months for children with congenital hearing loss. We will be hearing from Dr. Betty Vohr and a few of her colleagues, I believe Lucille St. Pierre and Richard Tucker, at the Warren Alpert Medical School of Brown University, the Women and Infants Children Hospital, which is affiliated with the Paul V. Sherlock Center on Disabilities. After that, as our operator mentioned, there will be a Q&A session, so we encourage you all to ask questions of our presenters. Just to give you all a brief overview of the cooperative agreement that we have with the NCBDDD, AUCD is charged with quite a few activities under that agreement, one of which this webinar is a part of. So I'll list some of the activities. Strengthening the nation's capacity to carry out public health and disability activities. Fostering collaborations among AUCD, its network, the USED LENS and DDRC members, and the National Center on Birth Defects and Developmental Disabilities. Providing technical assistance to state disability and health grantees. Enhancing the capacity of states and creating collaborative systems change in the early identification, assessment, and service coordination for children with autism spectrum disorders and related disabilities through the ACT Early Regional Summits. Support and strengthen expertise in the fields of birth defects and developmental disabilities through the training of professionals in public health and related fields. We also facilitate a wide range of research, education, and dissemination activities, which is one of these webinars. You all may have seen the acronym RTOI, or also heard it referred to as RTOI when you began today's webinar. That stands for Research Topics of Interest. RTOI are specific research area of significance identified by scientists at NCBDDD, at CDC. Some past RTOI projects have focused on the following areas: health communication and education, prevention of secondary conditions, healthcare cost analysis, quality of life studies, developmental factors and outcomes, health promotion interventions, and comorbidity prevalence studies. Some specific disability areas include autism spectrum disorder, Down syndrome, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, epilepsy, fragile X syndrome, hearing loss, fetal alcohol syndrome, spina bifida, and Tourette syndrome. So the research that you'll be hearing about today was supported as an RTOI through AUCD and NCBDDD. Lastly, before we turn things over to our presenters today, I just wanted to provide everyone with some webinar guidelines. All the participant lines have been muted to eliminate background noise, and that will be throughout the entire call until the Q&A session when you can unmute your line. Our operator, Therese, will come back on and give everyone those directions again to remind you how to ask a question. You can also submit a question during the presentation to the question and answer box that is on the right-hand side of your screen. And at the Q&A session, I will read those questions aloud so that everybody can hear the questions that are asked and the answers. So now I'm going to go ahead and turn things over to Dr. Vohr to do her presentation.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be here today to share some of the work that we're doing in Rhode Island. And as stated earlier, I have two co-investigators with me today, and they will be available for questions and answers also. Okay, I'm just going to minimize something here on the side.
Would you click through your screen?
Okay, can you see the screen now?
Dr. Vohr, we can't see your slides yet. Have you hit the Show My Screen button?
Yeah, I did. A screen showing. I did think I hit it. Let me minimize again. Can you put that up again, and I'll try and hit it again?
Sure. It says you're currently the presenter. Do you see a play button on your toolbar?
Does anybody see it? I just hit Show My Screen to attendees.
Great. So we see that now, and we see your PowerPoint as soon as you put it in slideshow mode.
Okay, great. Okay, and went back a little bit. Okay, are we all set?
Yes, we are.
Wonderful. I'm really delighted today to share a special topic with all of you. And in Rhode Island, we've had an interest in hearing loss for a number of years. We originally were in a funded study to develop a newborn hearing screening in the state, and happy to say we were the first state to develop a complete program of newborn universal screening. And one of the reasons it's really important is that congenital hearing loss is the most frequently diagnosed screenable disorder of newborns. And in this slide, you can see compared to sickle cell, hypothyroidism, PKU, and adrenal hyperplasia, permanent hearing loss has an amazing rate of 220 per 100,000 births. The well baby nursery and NICU have quite different rates. Of course, in the NICU, you have babies who have a number of risk factors for hearing loss. So whereas in the well baby nursery, the risk is 1 per 1,000, in the NICU, it approaches 5 to 10 per 1,000, depending on the acuity rate of a particular NICU. But for the total population, it extrapolates to a rate of 2 to 3 per 1,000. So for primary care providers and pediatricians, it is important because they will be caring for approximately 12 patients with hearing loss in a career. So let's think about this a little bit in terms of what's happening every day in the United States. 12,000 to 16,000 babies are born annually, 33 each day. Interestingly, 95% of children or infants with hearing loss are born to parents with hearing. However, the reason we're quite interested is that undetected hearing loss has serious negative consequences on language and behavior. And this applies even to children with mild or unilateral loss who are at increased risk of speech-language delays and grade repetition. However, many studies now, including Dr. Yoshinagi Tano, Mary Pat Moeller, and others, have shown that there can be dramatic benefits to language communication, literacy, behavioral outcomes, quality of life, in response to early identification and early intervention. So we have in Rhode Island the Family Perspective Study, and it's a prospective study of a cohort of children born and screened for hearing loss in Rhode Island with all degrees of permanent hearing loss. Now, we have been doing home visits at 6 to 10, 12 to 16, 18 to 24 months. We're actually now seeing the children at 36 to 48 months. But today we're going to focus on our outcomes of this cohort at 18 to 24 months. And as you've heard, we've been very grateful to have had continued funding for this study and currently from AUCD. In this slide, we see the study design. So our study groups are children with congenital hearing loss identified at birth or children screened and identified to have typical hearing. Predictors that we identified were maternal stress, scores on the parent-child involvement scale, which we'll tell you a bit more about, hearing loss, and whether or not the child required stay in the NICU. Our outcome for this study is words produced at 18 to 24 months. So here stated, our overall objective is to assess the effects of maternal stress, maternal communicative effectiveness, and child hearing loss on words produced at 18 to 24 months for children with and without congenital hearing loss. And second, to assess the effects of a stay in a neonatal intensive care unit. These are our hypotheses. Increased successful mother-child interactions will be associated with improved language outcomes, and for this study, it's vocabulary, spoken vocabulary, for children with and without hearing. I should say spoken. We also code for signs, but we do report separately on one child whose family's primary means of communication is ASL. Our second hypothesis is that increased verbal involvement, improved affective atmosphere, including positive regard, and global measures of interaction, including atmosphere, availability, and enjoyment, will be associated with improved language skills or vocabulary. And controlling behaviors such as controlled directiveness and intrusiveness will be associated with diminished language skills. And finally, greater maternal stress will be associated with lower vocabulary scores and language skills. We have analyzed outcomes other than vocabulary, but for this presentation, we will focus on vocabulary. So again, the study subjects were children with permanent hearing loss born in Rhode Island from October of 2002 to January of 2005, and children identified, these children were then matched to control children who had passed their hearing screen. So for this presentation, I'll tell you a bit about the matching in a minute. I would like to emphasize that children with all degrees of hearing loss and all types of hearing loss, including sensory neural hearing loss, permanent conductive hearing loss, and auditory neuropathy have been enrolled. So after we obtained informed consent from families of children with hearing loss, we scheduled home visits for that group. We also used matching criteria. We wanted the groups to be matched as closely as possible, so we looked at gender, NICU versus well baby nursery, the date of birth, the hospital of birth, we do have 7 birthing hospitals in Rhode Island, level of maternal education, race, ethnicity, and health insurance. So the assessments at the home visits included recording in each visit the demographics of the family and their Hollingshead social environmental status score. We actually do a number of parent interviews. In this presentation, I'm going to focus on parenting stress, but we do impact on the family, family support, and family resources. We do the parent caregiver involvement scale, and that's an assessment of a videotaped play session. And to assess the child's language outcomes, we administer the MacArthur-Bates CDI. So the parent caregiver involvement scale is a 10-minute play session, and it's coded by trained coders who were originally trained by a researcher at Brown University who was utilizing this scale. So six areas are coded for amount and quality of behaviors displayed by the parent. I should say we worked extensively to get inter-rater reliability on this coding, but it includes verbal involvement, responsiveness, play involvement, control and directives, positive regard, and negative regard. It just stopped advancing on me. Oh, there we go. So on this scale, there are four items that are scored as overall indicators, and these include availability, acceptance, atmosphere, and enjoyment, and five items that are rated as independent scores, and these include sensitivity, scaffolding, intrusiveness, structuring, intrusiveness, and hostility, and I'll go into the definitions of these. So in terms of availability, it's actually the parent response to the child based on the child's expressed needs or cues. Acceptance is the parental approval and acceptance of the child as observed during the session. Atmosphere is the synchrony between the child and the parent as they interact. And enjoyment is the amount of time that the adult and the child seem to be delighted with one another. Verbal involvement is the amount and quality of the caregiver's verbal communications with the child. Responsiveness is the caregiver's reaction to initiations by the child. Play involvement is the amount and quality of caregiver-child play during the 10-minute session. In contrast, we have some negative ones, including control directives, which is the amount and quality of structure and directives of the caregiver. So quality of the control and directives is a more optimal finding, whereas actual increased control and directives is a more negative interaction. Positive regard is how the caregiver displays positive attitude, and negative regard is negative emotions and statements directed specifically toward the child. Sensitivity is the caregiver's genuine interest and pleasure in the child, and play is creative and joyful for both. Scaffolding is an interesting phenomenon. It's maintaining appropriate level of structure to allow success during activities for the child. Intrusiveness is parenting behavior that prevents child autonomy. For instance, the parent does not allow the child to take a lead in any of the play activity. And structuring intrusiveness is the degree to which the caregiver structures the child's play taking, with care taken to follow the child's lead. Some of them are scored a little bit differently. In this one, it's a Likert scale, but optimal score is the midpoint. And hostility is threatening or frightening interaction with the child. We do administer the Parenting Stress Index, the short form with 36 questions, and it has a Likert scale from 1 to 5. And there are subscales or factor scores. Today we're going to be discussing primarily the total stress score with scores that can range between 36 and 180. The CDI, or MacArthur CDI, is administered depending on the level of communication of the child. Part one is words children use. It does include 680-item vocabulary checklist for words produced, and also the parent is asked questions about how the child uses words. Part two is more advanced with sentences and grammar and includes questions that expand to word endings, word forms, word combinations, and complexity of sentences. So percentile scores are available for words produced and sentence complexity, and their age and gender dependent. We do analyze our data. Our primary groups are the hearing loss children and the children with typical hearing. We did t-tests and chi-squares in the bivariate analysis. This was followed by correlation analysis to look at the relationship between our predictors and our outcomes. And finally, regression models were developed to show the relationships of the various predictors with the outcomes of our total cohort. So this shows our mothers. You may wonder 28 mothers, but we did have some multiple, so a mother is only counted once. You can see the mean ages were in the early 30s, 32 to 35, and it's not statistically significant between the groups. The vast majority were married, 83% and 90%. Very few had not completed high school, only two moms in the hearing loss group and one mom in the control group. Primary language was English in 86% and 100% of the group. Only a small percent were receiving Medicaid insurance, 13% and 21%. They sort of have middle income SES scores of 39 and 48, and it is slightly higher for the controls. And total stress scores, interestingly, did not differ between the two groups at this visit of 18 to 24 months. In terms of the infants, the hearing loss and control infants were matched for gender. They did not differ on race, NICU care, less than 30 weeks gestation, or age at the time of the mean age at the time of the visit was 21 and 22 months. In the hearing loss group, essentially 97% were participating in early intervention, and in the hearing controls, 33%. Now you may ask, why were they in early intervention? That's because specifically, since the literature indicates that about 40% of children with hearing loss may have other comorbidities, and we know the vast majority of children with hearing loss are NICU graduates, we matched a priori by stay in the NICU. Now, this was a surprise. We really thought that there would be significant differences in the mean scores between the children with hearing loss and children with hearing on the parent-child involvement scale. However, there were no significant differences. This could be related to sample size, but then we know there isn't a big overwhelming effect. So then we went on to look at relationships. So as I stated earlier, we did also do the impact on the family and the family resource scale. So on the left panel, on the x-axis, you see the scores for the impact on the family. And on the vertical axis, it's parenting stress. So here you can see that with increasing impact, there's an increasing relationship with stress of the caretaker. On the other hand, on the right-hand panel, we see the relationship with resources on the x-axis. So with greater degrees of resources, there's significantly less parental stress with an R value of negative 0.41. So after we looked at factors affecting stress, we then looked at the relationship between stress and the PCIS scores. So on all of these panels, on the x-axis, we have the parenting stress scores, which start at 50 or less and go up to 90 plus. So increasing parental stress was associated with decreased availability, minus 0.30 on the left upper panel. Left lower panel was associated with decreased enjoyment, as observed in the play session, minus 0.23. On the right upper panel, it was associated with decreasing positive regard. And in the lower right-hand panel, it was associated with decreased verbal involvement, again with an R value of minus 0.29. So we've gone from factors affecting stress and stress with PCIS, and now we're looking at PCIS scores relative to words produced by the children. Here we see on the upper left panel on the left, increased availability as scored is associated with increased words produced, R value 0.28. Sensitivity on the lower left panel, it's a little confusing because there is a high score of 9, it sort of drops off, but this was significant with an R of 0.21 suggesting increased sensitivity, overall increased words produced. Control and directives on the right top panel has a negative relationship with an R value of negative 0.19. And atmosphere demonstrated during the PCIS play interaction is significantly associated with increased words produced, again, with an R value of 0.3. Here we look directly at verbal involvement and parenting stress. Parenting stress is significantly independently related negatively to words produced with an R value of 0.33. And verbal involvement, increased verbal involvement is 0.19, so it is not as significant. So before I go and show you the MacArthur vocabulary scores at for our children at a mean age of 22 months between the hearing loss and controls, I thought you might be interested in what the 10th to 90th percentiles are for boys and girls. So let's just look at boys in the bottom panel. So if it's 10% at 18 months, they're going to have a mean of 20 words. The 50th percentile is 74 words. When you go up to the 99th percentile, it's 421 words. I'm also going to show it to you for 24 months. We'll look at boys again. 10th percentile here is 79 words, up to the 99th percentile, up to 630 words. Because I want to emphasize to you that in our cohort, the range for children with hearing loss was from 0 to 517. So it's apparent that some of our children with hearing loss are above the 50th percentile, yet we have some 10th percentile or lower. And our controls with hearing, the range was from 5 to 529 words. So on this table, on the left-hand side, we have the total sample and includes our NICU infants. It says 29 children with hearing loss. On the bottom, I have the number of words produced for our child using ASL. It was 256 words produced. Unfortunately, with one of our Spanish-speaking families, after the videotaping and the all of the interviews of the mom, before the MacArthur could be administered, the interpreter left, and we were unable to get that done on that family. But let's look for hearing loss versus control. 71 words produced versus 134, so it's obviously significantly less at 0.04. When we look at the percentile, it's the 17th percentile versus the 33rd. And below the 10th percentile, 20 of the children with hearing loss at that time were below the 10th percentile, or 69% versus 33%. So when you include the total cohort, which is the real-life cohort of children with hearing loss, it looks like the hearing loss children are doing significantly more poorly. We then excluded NICU infants on the right side. So hearing loss, now our mean number of words is up to 138 for children with hearing loss and 174 for controlled children, no longer statistically significantly different. The percentile, again, 31 versus 40%, although it's higher for controls, is not different. And it's borderline significant. I think if the sample size were a little bit higher, this would be significant. There's still more children below the 10th percentile, but it's dropped down to 5 children from the previous 20. So here's a diagram where we've tried to outline all of the factors associated with fewer words produced and the correlation coefficients. I'm going to point out some of the stronger correlation coefficients, and it does involve resources and support. So lower resources, lower support definitely contribute to stress. Interestingly, I don't have a line between hearing loss and stress, and in earlier ages with hearing loss, you do identify stress, but remember, all of our children except for one were in hearing loss early in the first year of life, and so the hearing loss independently relationship with stress was not identified, although NICU persists with an R value of 0.22. We then look at stress impacting on availability, verbal involvement, atmosphere, control directiveness, quality, and sensitivity. So increased stress is associated negatively with all of these outcomes. And then when we look at words produced, we do have contributions here of availability, atmosphere with an R value of 0.3, quality of control and directiveness, which is structuring, and sensitivity are all associated with more words produced. Stress, on the other hand, with fewer words produced, hearing loss, negative 0.24, fewer words produced, and NICU, minus 3, negative 0.3, fewer words produced. So what we did next was put all of this into a regression model, and each of these is a regression to predict words produced. In the regression models are NICU, hearing loss, total stress of the mom, and her PCIS subscore. In the first one, it's availability. So here we see that being in the NICU at 18 to 24 months has a beta of minus 0.68, which means that if you were in the NICU, you had 68 fewer words during the assessment. It has more of an impact than hearing loss, which was minus 63. Total stress continues to have an impact through, first of all, NICU and hearing loss impact in all of our models, as does maternal stress. It's always associated with fewer words produced. Let's look at our maternal characteristics during the play session. Availability has a beta of 26.5. It's a trend there of 0.16. So although it didn't provide an independent contribution, it suggests that with increased availability, the child would have 26.5 greater words produced. Greater control and directives was associated with 30 fewer words produced. However, control and directives quality was associated with 45 more words produced, a beta of 45.3. And we look at the variance of these three models. It's 27%, 27%, and 32%. So those are reasonably robust models for trying to predict words produced. Here's our three final models. We looked at atmosphere, sensitivity, and verbal involvement. And again, NICU has very negative impacts on these on words produced. Hearing loss is negatively associated. Total stress is negatively associated. But here we identify that enhanced atmosphere during the play session is associated with 36 more words produced. Sensitivity and verbal involvement are with 15 and 15.5. They don't quite make independent statistical significance in these models. And these models accounted for 25 to 29% of the variance. Okay, I'm trying to advance this slide at the moment. It seems frozen at the moment.
Betty, if you click on it and then click on it one more time, it might work.
Okay, it did. Okay. So I would like to conclude by saying that we've looked at many, many factors here. Child hearing loss, NICU stay, and maternal stress were all associated with fewer words produced at 18 to 24 months. In contrast, increased maternal control and directives during a play session was associated with 36 fewer words produced, whereas the quality of this interaction of control and directiveness was associated with 45 more words produced. Enhanced maternal atmosphere during the play session was associated with 36 more words produced. So the bottom line is that both maternal and child factors contribute substantially to the number of words produced at 18 to 24 months for children. We do think that this information is potentially important for providers, specifically EI providers, who need to take into consideration all of the maternal and child factors when developing an individualized family service plan for children with hearing loss. So thank you. That is our presentation for today, and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We will pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1. Your first question comes from Jane Lynn Testerman.
Hello.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. I just thought it asked me to do that. But actually, I did have a question. I was wondering about why control and directive behavior was sort of being targeted in regards to the mother-infant relations.
Okay. There are multiple components in terms of mother and child interactions. And control and directives essentially is a component of structuring. But there are some data indicating that a certain amount of structure is beneficial for children, and it's the quality of how it's presented for the child. But when the amount of structuring becomes excessive, the child sort of becomes stifled in terms of creativity and what the child can do. And it is part of this parent-child involvement scale, and others have reported on this as an association with various behavioral outcomes.
So did you end up seeing something more like a double bell curve where there was like not enough directive, too much, you know, just right, and then too much?
Yes. And I don't have all of the regressions here to show you, but some parents, there's amazing differences among parents. And I think part of the issue is nowadays sometimes they're first-time parents. There's not as much role modeling anymore in terms of parent-child interaction in families. And a lot of our families don't have grandparents, et cetera, in the area or other parents. And that's why we do feel that potentially the information that we're gathering here would be helpful in early intervention programs in terms of role modeling for families.
Okay. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, it just, the way it sounded like at first, kind of reminiscent of like the refrigerator mothers and, you know, autism and that sort of.
No, I wouldn't go quite that far, but there certainly is a lot of heterogeneity among our families. Although I should say in this final cohort, we are more middle SES, but we have families with lower education, bilingual, Hispanic. So we've been learning a lot from reviewing these videotapes. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And at this time, there are no further questions.
Great. And this is Carla at AUCD, and I've received a few questions via our text box. The first one comes from Norbert from Colorado. Have you looked specifically at any factor in the NICU explaining the impact of the NICU, for example, noise level in the NICU or level of prematurity?
Well, not. Thank you for that question. It's an important question. In the NICU, there obviously are noise levels, and particularly in the current setup of NICUs with often between 8 and 12 babies in a single day, with all of the monitors, equipment going, and the number of staff that are there. We have measured levels of background noise, and they're incredibly high. When studies have been done looking at factors within the NICU, it's confounded by the fact that babies in the NICU often have, first multiple risk factors for hearing loss. Babies who are extremely low birth weight will be on a ventilator for an extended period of time. They will also be more likely to receive aminoglycosides. They may also be more likely to have hyperbilirubinemia requiring phototherapy or exchange transfusion. As a result, you do need large cohorts. However, in also looking at NICUs in terms of sequelae, the more risk factors that you have, the more likely you are to have language delays, cognitive delays, hearing loss, etc. It's a good question, and you do need multi-center networks to try and dissect out what the relationships are. Our cohort isn't large enough for this study to look at specific risk factors, but I know the NICHD Neonatal Network recently had a phototherapy trial, and they're able to look a little bit more in depth at specific risk factors within the NICU. Thank you.
Great. I do have a few more questions in the text box, but at this time I'd like to ask our operator, Therese, are there any more audio questions?
Not at this time.
Okay. Well, our next question that came in through the webinar is, what are the resources you were referring to? Are they financial, emotional, programmatic, early intervention? And I believe this was on one of the graphs that you covered earlier.
What was the first part of that question?
What are the resources you're referring to?
Oh, okay. Sorry, we should have described that. That is a scale called the Family Resource Scale, and it has various subscores. Financial resources are a component of that scale, and we have been looking at what the what resources are within it that are more predictive. And it turns out financial resources are very important for our families. And we've been trying to look at this a little bit more carefully in terms of it's not just costs of hearing aids. It's for a lot of these children who are NICU grads or children with hearing loss, they have multiple appointments, which means a parent has to take off from work frequently, particularly within the first year or two of life. All of the therapies, early intervention, although a lot of it's covered by Part C, there are a lot of services that are not necessarily covered. And in this financial climate also, just taking off from work repeatedly for visits does engender a certain amount of stress related to availability of resources. And that is a good question.
Thank you. I do have one more that we've received. Are working mothers and stay-at-home mothers included in the cohort?
Yes, they are both included. Do we have any idea, Lucille, how many are stay-at-home moms here? Right. I don't have a specific answer for you, but we have both, and we have some who stayed home initially in the first year and then went back to work. We also have families with multiple other siblings, and we have a couple of families with multiples. So as you can see, it gets challenging there.
Thank you. At this time, we just received one more. Hang on. What type of measures were taken to validate the coding process?
Okay, so there are researchers at Brown, I'm trying to remember the name of the investigator. There's a PhD at Brown who's been using this scale for a number of years with his graduate students. So our research assistants on the project actually went and had training with their program and with the graduate students until inter-rater reliability was established. It was challenging to get them coded because we didn't accept coding of anyone that we had trained until they had reached a level of reliability on this procedure. So it's not that easy to implement in that it does require training.
Thank you for your answers, Dr. Vore. I'd like to ask our operator to explain to the audience one more time how to ask an audio question.
Yes, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from Shirley Russ.
Hi, Betty.
Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Betty. Thanks very much for that presentation. I think this is a really, really interesting study, and I think it's very useful results for early intervention. I had a question. You may have covered this in your earlier slides, but I wasn't sure. Did you find when you looked at comparing the children with hearing loss compared with your control group that there was a difference in how important this parenting style seemed to be in relation to language produced? That is, I was wondering, was the parenting style even more important for children with hearing loss, or did it turn out to be less important in that group?
Okay. We did find a number of these relationships, both when we looked independently within the hearing loss group and within the children with who had typical hearing. One of the issues of our study is because of the sample size, in order to do multivariate analysis and to identify what the most important predictors are, that is one of the reasons we combined the total group so that we could look not only of presence or absence of hearing loss, but also these variables. But I know Richard Tucker, our data analyst, is here, and a lot of the findings were identified within the subgroups. But they became more powerful when we combined and did the regressions with the total group and the correlations with the total group. So I think there were a few things that we identified. One of them was maternal age, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were
some differences.
Only within the hearing loss group, as I recall, maternal age was associated with a fair number of the variables on the PCIS. Maternal age did not seem to play a role within our control group, and we were thinking about that a lot. We're not certain if perhaps mothers who were a little bit older and more experienced and had other children previously had a more natural sense of atmosphere and sensitivity and enjoyment within the play group.
Right. I sort of wondered also whether you know, if you're a mum and you have a child with a hearing loss and you're not used to that situation, you know, you may start out doing a whole host of interactive things, but if you don't get the response that you anticipated, you may stop doing those things. I know with my own children, you know, there are certain things that you kind of start out doing, but if you don't get a whole lot of response, you kind of switch to a different tack. And I kind of wondered if some of the behaviors that you were seeing might be due to that type of learning over time.
Well,
there's no difference between
PCIS one of the things is we have done the PCIS at earlier time points also, and right now we're trying to look at change over time within those scores. We found that even at the younger ages that we administered, we did the play sessions in the early ages also, there were no essentially dramatically significant differences between our controls and our hearing loss group. I think as I'm listening to some of your comments and things, we can look a little bit more carefully at change over time within group to see if the mothers with hearing loss change a bit more in how they interact with their children. I know most of our children are fitted with hearing aids, and one of them now has a cochlear implant. We're not having a large group of, or a substantial group of infants with profound hearing loss, perhaps who are not being overly responsive. to their moms. I have been just amazed at the adaptability of our moms and the very positive attitude that many of them have despite slow progress in the development of language. I'd like to remind you that when we looked at, when we took the NICU babies out of the picture so that we essentially have normal cohorts of children with hearing loss and hearing, even the differences, the major differences in their number of words produced is no longer present. I think we're very interested in this topic of factors that may differ between mothers with babies hearing and non-hearing, and certainly we're going to continue to examine our data in detail to try and answer some of these questions.
Great. Therese, do we have any other audio questions at this time?
No, ma'am, not at this time.
Okay. Well, we are nearing the end of our hour that we planned for this webinar, and we want to remind you all that these slides will be available online. You will receive a follow-up email from our webinar software, GoToWebinar, and the link for these slides will be available in that email. We want to thank Dr. Vohr and her colleagues for being available and presenting on today's call, and our operator, Therese, for helping to facilitate, and also thank all of the participants for taking the time to be on today's call. So with that, I'd like to wrap everything up.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the opportunity to present our data.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's AUCD or TOI webinar conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.